Welcome to episode 492 of the Entertainment 2.0 podcast, brought to you by thedigitalmediazone.com. I'm Josh Pollard.
And I'm Richard Gunther, and this is the show that puts you in control of your favorite movies, music, shows, and games. We missed a week again, so we have a lot to talk about.
Yeah, we do. And again, it's my fault. But no reason to get into that. We've got feedback to get into. We actually have two pieces of feedback, but we're only going to cover one. The one that we're going to cover is from Paul, but we also got a really, really interesting one from Dan, but it's longer. It's pretty long, but it's really good. But because we have so much news to discuss tonight, we're going to hold off on Dan's message for the next episode. So Dan, thank you for sending that in. We will read it next time. But tonight, we have a very, very, very short one from Paul, who sent it just before we started recording tonight. He wanted to let us know that TV Time, the app that he's always writing in about, especially to talk to Richard about, he said, TV Time now does movies. The app update went live today. Richard, do I remember correctly that you stopped using TV Time?
No, I do still use it. I'm trying to see if I have the update available, and I don't see an update for mine. So I don't know what's going on there. But no, I do still use it. And it's a good way of keeping track of where I am on different shows. And what I found it most useful for is that time where I'm like, you know what? It's maybe 11:30. I'm not ready to go to bed and I want to watch something else, but what makes sense to watch? And it helps me keep track of, okay, well, you're almost finished this season of whatever. So you could watch an episode or two of that. And I have been using it pretty religiously. I'm not as good at keeping it up in real time, but maybe like the next morning when I'm having my coffee and reading the news and stuff like that, I'll go in and typically update things.
I thought that this app would like update itself based on hearing you watch it or something. Am I wrong about that?
You are wrong on that.
Okay.
You are wrong. That would be way creepy. There was an app that allowed you to identify what show is playing by audio. And then there was a separate app that used to do the same sort of TV tracking. And they, for some reason, never got those technologies together. I would love it if I could just press a button and say, log what I'm watching now, and it would have that TV show listening capability. But as best I know, there isn't anything that has all of those features built in. Anyway, I will check this out because I had been using, what was it? It's the thing with the popcorn icon, Flixster. I had been watching Flixster to track what movies I wanted to watch and had been watching, but Flixster doesn't seem to be updating with new content lately. So I'm wondering if Time Warner is about to just kind of pull the plug on that. They've largely been dismantling that app since it stopped supporting Ultraviolet over a year or two ago.
Hmm. Okay. Cool. Maybe I'll actually install that and give it a try. This is the one that also had trivia, right?
It does. It has questions and polls that you can take, and it has conversation, and you only see the conversation about an episode after you've marked it as watched, which I think is really clever. So you don't end up spoiling yourself on stuff. So
it's
a pretty good thing. It has, I think I've mentioned before, it has lots of UX annoyances and bugs that they just are kind of sloppy about from platform to platform, particularly on my tablet, but overall I like what the app does, so I find it useful. So
cool.
Thanks for the update, Paul.
Yeah. All right, let's dig into the news. There was a ton here, and there's some stuff that I'm really excited about, but I don't know that there was any one thing that really stood out as a big featured story. So Richard might disagree. So I put the thing that I think he's probably the most interested in first, just for his sake.
Oh, thanks, Josh.
Yeah, because it's not even a feature I can use, although it probably is available on my TV, but probably not yours. And that feature is that AirPlay 2 and HomeKit have finally made their way to some TVs I believe these are the first ones, even though Samsung had been talking about it. I'm not sure if it actually made it to the Samsung TVs yet, but it's now on some LG TVs and some Vizio TVs. So you've got an LG, I've got a Vizio. With Vizio, it works on SmartCast TVs going back to 2016, which includes my 2016 M series, but on LG, it's their high-end 4K sets, including their OLEDs and their nano cell TVs with ThinQ, but it's only the 2019 models.
Yeah, and that's actually up for a little bit of debate. It seems like LG in Korea hasn't been fully communicating with LG in the US, and there's been some differences in what's been reported as to whether or not it's going to hit older models. I am fairly confident it is not going to go back to my 2016 model of my OLED, but it might in fact go to 2018 models. I think we'll have to wait and see on that. Certainly there's a lot of outrage in the LG customer community that they're only supporting the current year TV. And from what I understand, there's absolutely no good damn reason for it. So I think that that's something that we may end up seeing them kind of expand.
Hmm. Well, that'd be nice for LG users for sure.
Yeah.
Especially since they make arguably the best looking TVs available right now.
Right, right. And Vizio, on the other hand, is making the most affordable televisions available for high-quality 4K TVs. So I like the approach that they're taking. And we knew when we reported about this at CES that, Vizio was really the one that was going to come in with the broadest support. They stated that from the beginning.
Right, right. Although I might argue with your statement there that Vizio is selling the most affordable 4K TVs right now. I think TCL's got them beat there.
Yeah, very good point. Yes, and Rob is mentioning the same thing in our chat as we're talking about this. That's a very good point. I didn't even think about TCL because they're not one of the players in the AirPlay 2 HomeKit add-on. They're right. Not going to be including that. At least they haven't talked about it yet. And part of the reason for that is because they're one of the manufacturers that offers TVs with Roku built in. And right. That's worked out very well for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Okay, so that's cool news for some TV owners out there, although not the most price conscious 4K TVs or the most common TVs, which would be the Samsung ones. So, be curious to see where that goes moving forward. Maybe the most exciting or most interesting news of the week is actually a story from our friend Dave Zatz over at Zatz Not Funny. Channels DVR is like Channels is one of those apps that's got a cult following. And I'm sure we have a lot of listeners who love Channels. It reminds me a lot of Media Center in terms of its niche audience, right? It is an app that started its life as an Apple TV app for watching your HD home run content, like your video from your over-the-air HD home run TV tuner.
And it is still kind of the de facto app for that because HD home run doesn't exist on, as an app, doesn't exist on the Apple TV platform
right.
yet.
Still.
Right.
Yeah. So it's always been the way to watch your HD home run TV stuff, like live TV through there. And then last year, I think it was, they rolled out their own DVR app and DVR server and app. It requires a subscription similar to HD home run DVR, Plex DVR. They're all subscription things. TiVo, basically everything that's a DVR requires a subscription. But they're now rolling out in beta a feature similar to what HD home run was doing and then recently had to kill. And that is the ability to DVR streaming video from premium sources. Now they're doing it in a very different way than HD home run was doing it. So The way this one works is they use what's called TV Everywhere. And maybe that's not a brand or, you know, actual proper noun that most people recognize, but TV Everywhere is that service where you log into, say, the Disney app or, you know, basically any of those types of apps, HGTV, you know, whatever. I assume they have an app. I actually don't even know. With your pay TV credentials. So typically that's a cable TV provider or DirecTV or something. But I think maybe some of these streaming providers now might tap into TV Everywhere. But I don't know for sure, but it's a standard, so they could. And channels will now allow you to record from essentially like you're recording from those apps, but it's just straight into your channel's DVR. And you're not going to have to worry about the same type of limitations or legal issues that HD Home Run ran into because it's using TV Everywhere. Like it's the way to log in. You already have to have a paid TV subscription for this to work. So I think this is really awesome and it doesn't cost any extra.
Yeah, I think it is very interesting. I'm so curious about this because my first reaction to this was, wow, that sounds a whole lot like what PlayOn is doing. But they're actually talking about recording through TV Everywhere. Now, TV Everywhere was something kind of concocted by the providers as their way of providing some sort of, well, think of it as OAuth for your cable and TV providers.
Right.
It's really an authentication across platforms to allow you to log into, say, like you said, HGTV, and shame on you for not knowing that they do have an app. Of course they do. And you're logging in with your own provider's information. So in my case, I'm logging in with Verizon Fios. And that's a great feature. It isn't available consistently across either providers or across channels or apps. So that's a little bit frustrating. But nonetheless, if they're actually doing this in a way that is in cooperation with the TV Everywhere folks, that's amazing to me. It's not clear to me from this piece whether this is, for lack of a better word, sanctioned.
Yes.
I mean, you could argue that, well, I don't know if it's true or not. I was going to say you could argue that PlayOn might be using TV Everywhere to log into the different apps that they have available, but I don't know that they are. I think they have separate logins. I don't know. This is weird. This is weird. I like it. I think it's cool. I hope it is sanctioned because I would hate to see it shut down. The industry tends to look harshly upon stuff like this, although Channels is a fairly small player like PlayOn, and maybe it'll get overlooked.
Yeah. Yeah. Hopefully. Because it's a really awesome service, and their DVR runs on basically anything. You know, it's similar to the Plex DVR and the HD Home Run DVR. You can run it on a PC, but you can also run it on most common NAS boxes, even the Drobo 5N, and it'll run on the NVIDIA Shield. So it'll run on basically anything. It is the priciest of this type of offering, though. You know, Plex is, oh gosh, I can't even remember. Plex is $5 a month. I can't remember what it adds up to on the yearly subscriptions and stuff like that.
This is $8, I believe, isn't it?
This is $8 a month, or $80 a year, which gets you a little bit of a break. But, you know, HD Home Run DVR is $30 or $35 a month, you know, significantly cheaper, but doesn't give you this premium TV recording capability anymore, unfortunately.
Right.
All right. So this next story, Richard, is actually the one that I'm the most excited about, which probably surprises you.
But no, it doesn't surprise me.
Okay. So this next one is about Disney Plus, and it is that they've announced pricing now, and What kind of surprised me about all of this is that today they also announced the bundle that we were really hoping that they would announce and the price for it. And that bundle is Disney Plus. So this is Disney's upcoming streaming service that's really targeted more at kids and family, but lots of Disney content there, plus Marvel things and, you know, stuff like that. It's going to be $7.99 a month on its own. Like if you just want Disney Plus, it's $7.99 a month, which I think is an awesome price. But they're bundling it with ESPN Plus and Hulu. And when you combine all of them, you pay $12.99 a month. There are some pluses here and some minuses. The huge plus is that you save a bunch of money because Disney Plus is $8 a month, ESPN Plus is $5, Hulu is $6. So you're saving about $6 a month if you were already going to subscribe to all three.
Mm-hmm.
The one downside here is I don't know if they have a bundle that includes Hulu with no commercials.
Right. I was just thinking that. As far as I can tell, they aren't offering that. Or if they are, they haven't announced what the pricing for that would be. And as we've discussed in the past, that's a pretty big leap from $5 a month now to, or $6 a month, sorry, to, I believe, $12 a month is what I'm paying for the ad-free version. So it presumably it's going to cost more if they add that.
Right.
Otherwise, expect that you're going to have ads with your Hulu content.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I'm currently paying for the ad-supported version of Hulu and was already planning to get Disney. And I really like having ESPN Plus during the hockey season. So I'm super pumped about this. This is a no-brainer for me.
It's a no-brainer for you because not only are you getting ESPN for free, it's like they're paying you to get ESPN.
Right.
Because it'll be a dollar less than what you pay now.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So I'm really, really excited about this and reminded my kids about it tonight. And they were like, oh, really? And they're like rattling off all these Disney shows. Is it going to have this? Is it going to have this? Is it going to have that? Probably. The answer is almost definitely yes to almost everything that you're asking me about children.
Yep.
So yeah, this is going to be a huge hit in my house. So I'm very, very excited about this.
Oh, that's great. That's very cool.
Another thing that is new in my house, but no one cares but me, is that the NVIDIA Shield TV also got updated in the last week. It's the device that most people in my house use, but they don't care about any of these features. So this new update, it is version 8 of the NVIDIA Shield software, which confusingly gives you Android 9. Maybe they should have just pulled a Microsoft, skipped a number, and made these things match up, but they didn't. So basically every year we're going to get to make fun of them doing this. So just skip a number, guys. It'll be for the best. There's not a ton of huge things here from the actual system, with the one exception of there's a new setting. Like they changed the settings around, which I don't really care. You don't deal with the settings that much. But they did add one new setting, which is called Match Content Color Space. I don't think anyone, like outside of maybe people who listen to the AV Rant podcast or you, Richard, since you're raising your hand, would even know what that means.
Unless you have an Apple TV, because they did a very similar thing.
Is this what they called it?
I don't think they called it this, but it was a very similar name. It was not clear why they don't just call this what it really is, which is essentially, you know, automatic HDR or HDR on demand or something like that. You know, whatever,
right.
Whatever this is called, it switches your TV between HDR and non-HDR mode, which is really important. Because if you try to look at a standard UI for, I don't know, any television interface or an app that isn't designed to work with HDR, it's going to end up looking all washed out. It's almost like those old polarized photographs where you just have the color just really, really cranked so that it doesn't look right. So this will dynamically switch back and forth rather than always being in HDR mode. And I think this is really important. I'm glad to see they're doing it. I hope they do a better job with this first release than Apple did with theirs.
Right. Right. So I guess I need to go make sure that I've actually turned that setting on. I'm not sure if it's the default setting. It should be. They should make that the default. So the other thing that it actually brings with it is a bunch of app updates. That message that we didn't read at the beginning of the show, one of the things that he talks about is that the Hulu app on Android TVs is actually lacking in a lot of features. That's not true as of now. That message came in a couple weeks ago. Android TV devices, including the NVIDIA Shield, do now have an updated Hulu app, and it brings with it Hulu Live TV plus a bunch of other features like profiles and stuff. I think you, Richard, you probably remember when I first got Hulu and you were like, yeah, just set up profiles for your kids. And I was like, what profiles? I don't see anything about profiles. It's because I was using it on my NVIDIA Shield.
That would explain it. I find it really curious that the app is tied to this OS update for the box itself. And the same is true for Netflix. Netflix is getting some updates associated with this app. And I wonder if it's because the OS didn't previously provide the capabilities that were needed to implement some of these features.
Maybe, but I don't know. Like, what could they have possibly needed from the operating system to do these features in the Hulu app?
Well, I don't know. But for example, one of the new things is the Hulu with live TV, right? So maybe there wasn't the necessary content protection that the providers are requiring for any live streaming of their content.
I don't know. Like, Netflix has content, stream protection
not,
and stuff.
Not live streaming. It's a different animal. So
that's true.
I have to believe it has something to do with capabilities. Now, why user profiles? It's probably just because that was bundled in with the version that also included these other things, right?
Right. Yeah, so Netflix is getting Dolby Digital Plus 5.1 with the audio that can go up to 640 kilobits per second. So that's good. And then also three new apps, at least three new featured apps, Bravo, E, and Fandango Now.
You say Fandango Now like it doesn't matter, but Fandango Now is now one of the potential homes for what was once your ultraviolet content.
Yeah. I remembered that as I was like sighing over Fandango Now. It is, but just use Movies Anywhere.
Yes, but Movies Anywhere only has movies. And
oh, right.
If you bought and redeemed digital content for TV series, they only show up in Vudu and Fandango Now.
Right. And Vudu's user interface is still awful.
Oh, so yeah, it's terrible.
Maybe Fandango's is actually a little bit more usable.
It's prettier. I don't know that it's more usable.
The other thing that happened when this update rolled out for the NVIDIA Shield is it broke the ability to use the HD Home Run DVR as like using your Shield as a DVR. Now, that sucks, but fortunately, Silicon Dust was on it and they fixed it within like a day. So it wasn't broken long, and I'm not sure if there were any major repercussions like it destroyed the universe. I really doubt that's the case. I'm sure all of your previous recordings were fine. I didn't look into the details. I'm not currently really depending on that for my stuff right now since I've got the TiVo, but that would have really stunk. And it made me wonder, like, does NVIDIA not have like a developer/beta program that HD Home Run could have been testing their stuff with?
Well, yeah, I mean, I have to assume that they do, but it's possible that Silicon Dust wanted to wait until the release was out there and that everything was cool and they weren't going to pull it back or something like that before they released their update, in case anything that they have in their update is dependent on the new release.
Yeah, that's true. That could be it. All right, so That's it for the NVIDIA Shield. If you've got one, you already know that you have this update if you've used it, because they make it super obvious and a little bit obnoxious that there's a new update available for your NVIDIA Shield. So,
all right. Well, there's one more video story, and we haven't really talked a whole lot about Locast. You may recall from about 2 or 3 years ago, a company called Aereo was sued out of existence by decision from the Supreme Court for providing TV service over the internet for people who otherwise weren't able to receive standard over-the-air TV. And what they did was they created this network of tiny individual antennas, and they believed that the individual antennas, which were assigned specifically to a user, would get them around any retransmission legalities that might come up. It didn't. They ended up getting shut down, and ultimately TiVo ended up buying their IP and incorporating some of it into their over-the-air Bolt box. But there's another player now, and that player is called Locast. Locast is pretty much doing the same sort of thing, slightly different technology. The main difference is that Locast doesn't receive any financial benefit from doing the retransmission. And because of an old 70s law, they're allowed to provide this service as a not-for-profit organization. So if you don't get CBS or NBC or ABC or Fox where you are, and you want to be able to get it through the web or something like that, from your local provider, you would be able to do that through Locast. And you could pay for it, or you don't have to pay for it. They take donations, but they don't have any sort of paid subscription. And that's how they're getting around this, you know, pay to rebroadcast or retransmit thing. Well, it didn't take long for CBS, NBC, ABC, and Fox to get all their lawyers in a room together and file a suit against Locast. And they are claiming that, in fact, Locast is getting some financial benefit from companies like AT&T, who have been donors to their effort. And they're questioning that. They're like, well, you know, CBS and AT&T, they're kind of in a dispute right now. And AT&T has been telling customers, well, you could just go and watch CBS over on Locast in the meantime until we get this all straightened out with CBS. So that looks a little bit suspicious. And they're arguing that, in fact, Locast is receiving financial benefit indirectly from the referrals that they're getting from AT&T, and then directly from the donations that they're getting, even though they're not for profit. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with this. I doubt that this will go all the way to the Supreme Court like the Aereo decision did. This is really just about deciding whether or not there's some... unlike Aereo, which was exploiting a loophole, it seems to me that the networks here are trying to make this case on a loophole. And I think they'll have a harder time proving it. But, you know, this is one of those services that I think is really interesting. Locast apparently is ready to fight this. They were expecting that they were going to have some legal challenges. So this is something that we'll watch. And in the meantime, if Locast is available in your area, you can get over-the-air channels from Locast at no cost if you want to.
So what's your take on this? Like, do you think that they're skirting the rules and that they're not really a nonprofit and that they should be shut down? Or,
well, I don't think that they're not really a nonprofit. I mean, they have to qualify as a nonprofit. You have there's a lot. Well, I say that, but look, NFL. But I think that they are likely operating within the constraints of a not-for-profit organization. And if that's the case, then I personally believe that they're okay. Their argument is that they're doing this as a public service, mm-hmm. that they want to make the content that is available to citizens in the U.S. available freely over the air to people who can't receive it over the air. I mean, setting up an antenna nowadays is not all that easy for normal people. But signing up for a free service to watch that same content, a lot of people can do that. So I think we'll have to see.
Yeah.
And that's it for video.
Yeah. A lot of video stories today. Only one audio story. And this is a great one if you're about to start your college studies, or maybe you've been in college for a while and you're in the U.S. Amazon Music Unlimited, which, you know, of Amazon's like 47 different music offerings, this is the one that's the closest to Spotify and Apple Music, where, you know, a collection of 50 million plus songs, you pay them every month and you get access to listen to whatever you want, whenever you want, on a bunch of different devices. It's now 99 cents a month if you're a college student. And there's one other important thing. If you are subscribed to the Amazon Prime service for students, which is called Prime Student. So it's like Amazon Prime, but for students, and it costs less money, as most of these student programs do. Prime Student is $6.49 a month, or $60 a year, compared to the $120 a year that Richard and I, and probably every single one of our listeners who's in the United States, pays for Amazon Prime. And the Amazon Music Unlimited service is normally $7.99 a month. So you're saving $7 a month. This is an awesome deal if you're a college student. Like, I don't know why you wouldn't pick this over some of the competitors. This sounds great.
It does sound great. And I think it puts them at a real advantage against services like Spotify or like Apple Music. And I believe Apple Music has a student rate, but I don't think it's anywhere near as good as this. This is fantastic. And you're already saving on the Prime Student $60 a year. I mean, $60 isn't chump change. That's a hard thing to just kind of pay for out of pocket as a student. However, I imagine that a lot of parents would probably set their kids up with this, because this is a good way to get supplies and to order books and things like that that would otherwise kind of, you know, you'd get raked over the coals for if you bought them through your school store or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Right. Now, there is, I had to Google this. I couldn't remember all the details, but Spotify does have a deal. We talked about this a few months ago when this was announced. And if all you care about is streaming stuff and you don't care about the shipping that Amazon Prime gets you, the Spotify deal is actually still, well, really way better. Because for students with Spotify, for $4.99 a month, you get Spotify Premium.
And Hulu, right?
Plus Hulu with ads.
Yeah.
Plus Showtime for $5 a month. So
yeah, you're a student. You don't have time to watch Showtime.
Right. That's not the case. I was listening to the Smart Home Show this week. I listened to a certain Richard Gunther talking about how many classes he skipped the last year that he was in college.
Oh, it was so bad.
So clearly you had time for Showtime. All right, now for a little bit of gaming news this week. Not a ton, but the biggest story is from the Xbox side of the house, and that is Microsoft is working on yet another redesign of the Xbox One dashboard user interface. And it's fairly significant, at least in terms of what you see when you first turn it on, because everything, as we like to say, below the fold, everything that you would have to scroll to see looks like it's the same, where you can set up different rows of content based on games and apps and stuff that you care about. All of that stuff seems the same. Everything above it, though, the main part of the screen has been shifted around and some new buttons in place. So instead of having what they call twist, it's really a horizontally scrolling interface that you know, went between like the main home screen, mixer stuff, community stuff, and the store. And all of that is gone. And instead, it's just one screen. you end up with.
Think about that for a minute. That has been a mainstay since the beginning. That whole concept existed since the Blades from the original Xbox.
Right. On the Xbox 360.
Yes.
Yeah. That's not the original Xbox.
Sorry. On the Xbox 360. Yes.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right. So that's gone. And instead you get buttons. So the most recent app or game that you were playing still gets a pretty big square icon on the left side, although it's not nearly as big as some of the previous iterations of the user interface. But directly below that, you get four buttons, which mostly correlate to those things that the Twist would have done for you. Those four buttons are for Game Pass, which I think is new. I don't think that's currently a Twist. Mixer, the store, and the Xbox community. So, easier access to Game Pass content. And then to the right of that, you get five icons for the five most recent games and apps that you've played, plus a button to get you to the main games and apps user interface. All of this, I think, looks pretty good.
Wait, you're missing something. Plus ads.
Well, there's always been ads. So, frankly, I think the ads seem a little less intrusive than they have in some of the previous versions of the interface.
Yeah, I would probably agree with that because they're segregated a little bit better now, but they are above the fold, just like they were before.
Yes. Yes, they are. Anybody ever notice them when they turn their Xbox on? I don't.
I notice them because they take up tiles that would otherwise be recently used applications.
I guess that's true.
And that is one thing that they fix with this design, that the row of tiles for recently used apps or games is dedicated to just that purpose.
Right. There aren't ad tiles mixed in with that. Yeah, you're correct. So I think that would you say both of us like this new look? Is it good? You like it?
Nope.
No? What don't you like about it?
Well, I want to see how you navigate from the other areas back to here. If what they've done is made everything hierarchical, then I think this is foolish because study after study after study in user experience has shown that ever-present modes of operation, which are typically represented as tabs or as they called them, twists, is a much more efficient way of moving around a system than to have to drill up and down and up and down and up and down into everything. So I'll be curious to see how that's implemented.
Yeah, and I agree, although we're all pretty used to that style of navigating because that's how our phones work. And this might be faster because it felt like it took forever to get over to the store with the way that it currently works. So I'm excited about this. I think it's going to be better. The slightly more interesting part of this story is that it also brings with it the final real official death of Cortana on the Xbox One. It's gone. You can't use Cortana through a headset and presumably through a Kinect either, although they didn't even mention the Kinect, which that tells you a lot about the state of the Kinect nowadays. It just doesn't work. Like, you can still use Cortana on your phone if you've got Cortana on your iPhone or your Android device or on your Windows 10 devices. You can ask Cortana, or I guess your Harman Kardon Invoke for the five people out there who have that. You could use that to turn on your Xbox and issue commands through Cortana. But there's no more Cortana on the Xbox, which I'm totally fine with. Like, she was basically just a nuisance. I never found her useful. She frequently activated when I didn't want her to. And I know I'm anthropomorphizing. Is that the right word here? a digital assistant, but it's hard not to with a name like Cortana. Yeah, I'm okay with Cortana being gone here. It's the direction that Microsoft has been moving for a long time with Cortana. It's going away in most places, except mobile, which I still think is weird because while it makes sense to have that type of assistant on mobile, who's actually using it on their phone?
I know at least one person.
Yes. So he Rob will be in the chat, sending us direct messages after after he hears this episode.
You know who you are. So Rob in the chat is mentioning that the original Xbox commands still work with the Kinect. My question, though, is will they still work, or is this the elimination of voice control entirely for the Xbox? And I don't know the answer to that.
Yeah, I don't know the answer either, but I suspect that they're going to stick around. If they've stuck around this long, there's no reason to get rid of them. Like, they were, I think the reason they're still there is because they were the ones that were good. Like,
well, I would argue with you on that. They weren't good. What they were is voice recall of navigation commands. They were not anything that was interactive or allowed you to get what you want. You know, how many times have I talked about I wanted to just walk in the family room and say, Xbox, play music from Hans Zimmer. And that never worked because right. you had to simulate with your voice the process of going to the app and opening the app and navigating to the place that you wanted to then get the artist that you want. I mean, it was just ridiculous. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like this to me, like with Cortana, this to me is them kind of giving up on the AI presence in these devices, like your computer and your Xbox. And I know they have business reasons for doing it, but it still frustrates me.
So while you're right that you couldn't ever use the voice commands for doing more AI assistant-y type things like that, you could do things that were actually really useful, especially from a gaming perspective. You could very easily turn the Xbox on, very easily. It was with like five less syllables than it required when using Cortana. And you could very quickly and easily do the Xbox record that. Sorry if I just set that off on anybody's Xbox, where it would record the last 30 seconds or whatever you've got it set to in your settings. To record the last X period of time of your game, which is awesome. I love the Xbox DVR sure. feature.
Yep.
And it's way yep. faster and way less intrusive than having to hit the guide button and another button. So I hope they don't go away because I still like those features.
It's also important to remember that integrations with other assistants are still going to work. So you could right. use Amazon's assistant to control your Xbox, and that is still going to work okay.
Right. Which so weird. This is all so weird. But that's the one that makes sense. Like, make the ones that people actually have. Kevin in the chat says he has 3 Harman Kardon Invokes, and he still uses a Windows mobile phone, and all of that stuff is super useful to him. I'm glad it is, but he's obviously in the very extreme minority on those things.
Yeah, I'm amazed that you're still using Windows Mobile. That's you are what's the opposite of a pioneer? You're not the first in, you're the last out. I don't know.
Curmudgeon. No, that's not
what I'm going
for. I'm just kidding, Kevin. I'm just kidding.
No.
I don't know what the opposite of a pioneer is. Anyway, we have one more very quick gaming story, and that is that if you are a PlayStation gamer, EA Access is now finally available on the PlayStation 4. Real quick recap of what the service is. You pay $5 a month or $30 a year, and you get unlimited access to all of the games in the EA Vault. That's a huge amount of games. It's, you know, all of their previous sports titles, basically. You know, Battlefield, Battlefront, you know, those types of games. EA makes a ton of games. They're one of the biggest publishers in the world, and they've got buckets, you know, dozens and dozens of games in the vault. And then they're constantly adding games. So like the Madden 20 that just came out, like, it's not in the vault yet, but it will be around the end of the year, probably. So you get unlimited access to all that stuff. You also get early access to games. You know, a few days before they come out, you can play them for like 10 hours. It's essentially a 10-hour demo of games. You also get 10% off of digital purchases on games and DLC. It's cool service. As an Xbox owner, I know this because it's been available on the Xbox for 5 years. That's where it debuted. And it's been on PC for 3 years. So welcome to the party, PlayStation owners. You can finally get EA access, you know, a year before the next PlayStation console comes out. I don't know. It's fun to make fun of it. It's just ridiculous that it took this long for this to happen. And I think it's entirely because Sony didn't want to do it. So there you go. You've now got access if you're a PlayStation 4 owner. All right. We also, because it's a new month, have some new free games on both Xbox and PlayStation. Some pretty good games here on both sides. So on the Xbox One, you're getting all month long Gears of War 4. I'll be talking about that game a little bit later. This is the most recent one, and Gears of War 5, actually it's just called Gears 5, comes out next month, I think it is. So play this one and get ready for the next game that's coming out. And then you still have time up until August 15th to pick up Big Crown Showdown from last month. But then August 16th through September 15th, you'll get Forza Motorsport 6. It's another Xbox One game. You might think six, that's a high number. That must be the most recent Motorsport game. It's not. There's Forza Motorsport 7. So this is from... It must be 3 years ago now.
Has it been three? I'm thinking two.
It's been at least three. Because this is the year they flip-flop years. You know, 1 year you get Motorsport, 1 year you get Horizon.
Right.
This year would have been the year for Motorsport. So it would have been Forza Motorsport 7 this year, but they're not releasing a game this year. So it might actually be 4 years old. It's old, real old. But it's still a great game.
You
probably shouldn't. Yeah, I actually googled it because I wasn't sure myself. August 1st through the 15th, the first half of the month, your free Xbox 360 game is Torchlight, and in the second half of the month, it's Castlevania Lords of Shadow. And obviously those 360 games are backwards compatible and can be played on your Xbox One. On PlayStation, your PlayStation Plus free games for August are Wipeout Omega Collection and Sniper Elite 4. Wipeout Omega Collection was, I think it was the first game I purchased on my PlayStation. It's Wipeout. It's great. It's a ton of fun. It's futuristic hovercraft racing game. It's a ton of fun. Absolutely get that. It's so much fun. And then Sniper Elite 4, it's a first-person shooter. I think this is based in World War II, but I'm not really sure off the top of my head. I've never actually played the Sniper Elite games. It's just not a series I've gotten into. But hey, they're both free, so grab them if you're a PlayStation Plus subscriber.
Good stuff.
Yeah, that's it for our news. Before we get into what's going on in our entertainment centers, I want to make a request.
Oh, and it's worse than you think, Josh.
What's worse? What's going on in your entertainment
discoverability
center? Oh yes, discoverability is tough. And when we're talking about discoverability here, we mean podcast discoverability. It can be hard to find podcasts, so do us a favor and just share a link with your friends to this show. Take a screenshot in whatever app you're listening to this on, post it on Twitter, post it on Facebook. Take a link to the iTunes Marketplace, whatever, maybe just a link to our website. But share this podcast with your friends so that they can get caught up on all of the latest consumer entertainment technology news.
And we really appreciate that help. In Apple's iTunes this week, they dramatically changed the way they organize podcasts, particularly in the technology space. Technology previously was broken down into four subcategories, and we fell under tech news. Those subcategories helped us get found because in tech news, while we were never in the top 10, we would be in the top 200 list pretty regularly. On Home On, for example, we were in the top 10 very regularly in the gadgets subcategory. Now everything is just lumped under technology, and we have little hope of getting up there. So we really depend on you sharing the information with your friends so that people can find out about the show. Josh, quiz for Josh. Do you know what the number one technology podcast is? Get ready to explode.
Oh, gosh. It's not Windows Weekly, is it?
Nope. It's a daily show.
It's a daily show. Is it DTNS?
Next clue. It's 3 hours long.
A three-hour daily tech news show? I actually don't even know what that is.
The number one technology podcast is the Joe Rogan Experience.
Are you kidding me?
Nope.
I give up.
Yep.
I'm done. I'm done with podcast. Like, we're not going to make it episode 500 now. I'm done podcast.
Is that ridiculous?
Thank you.
Why? Apple. Because they occasionally talk about something technology related or have a technology segment. Come on. Yeah.
All right. Let's get on that to happier times. Hopefully.
Yes. Happier maybe. Times. In my entertainment center, I said goodbye to my Kinect.
Why?
And these are happier times because it means far fewer cables. Oh, man, I forgot just how much was involved in that. Literally three boxes. The USB connection thing, right. The power brick, the Kinect itself. What a mess. So I'm glad to just get rid of that. I haven't been using voice with my Xbox for a very long time. I just use it with my remote. And so I'm happy to just kind of clean up my system there a little bit.
I actually almost did the same thing because one of my cats decided he was done with the Kinect. I came home one day and was like, why is the Kinect not on top of the TV anymore? Walk around behind the TV. It's dangling behind the TV. I have no idea how the cat did that, but I'm sure it was a cat. And I was not happy. And I thought, maybe I should just disconnect this. How often do I use it? But I didn't. I left it there. I mean, I didn't leave it dangling behind the TV. I put it back on top of the TV. But, yeah.
Okay. So in terms of stuff I've been watching, it's been a long time since we've spoken. So one of the things that I was watching about 2 weeks ago was the Democratic debates. Man, that was a lot of television. And I don't know that we know anything more now than we did then. So, you know. Not really. And then also, of course, Big Brother, keeping up with that. That's getting a little bit better now that the, quote, jerky cool kids are all starting to turn on each other. So... good. Maybe we'll get rid of some of them. And then I have been keeping up with Extras. And the last episode of Extras that I watched had I want to say Jean-Luc Picard. Patrick Stewart. And it was a very, very funny episode. I thoroughly enjoyed that. In the 2 weeks that have transpired, we watched all of Stranger Things season 3. Really enjoyed that. I know that many people said that wasn't as good as the past seasons. We've really enjoyed that and just kind of binged through that. It was so good. We then got back to Lost in Space. So hadn't seen anything since episode 1 of that. And we restarted that again. I started watching The Boys. Now, I'm watching it just because it's getting so much promotion and it seemed interesting. But wow, I think they promoted this all wrong because the trailers for this thing make it seem outrageously violent. And it has a couple moments that are like, ugh, but it did not strike me, at least the first episode. I haven't watched beyond that yet, but I will watch more. It didn't strike me as anywhere near as violent as the ad portrayed it. So I guess we'll have to see how that goes. I like it. I like what I saw so far. I was cleaning through a bunch of digital files And we've all talked and joked about the years and years and years of DVR'd content that I have on various hard disks around my home. And one of the things that I had recorded 11 years ago was a TV miniseries version of The Andromeda Strain. And I never watched it. So I figured, okay, well, you know, I'm trying to clean out some of my old files. I'll watch this old TiVo recorded thing. So I started watching that. Watched the first half, really liked it. Wanted to watch the second half. Guess what? 11 years ago, my TiVo recorded 2 copies of the same episode that aired at different times.
So you've kept it on your TiVo for 11 years, and it wasn't even the whole thing. This was hilarious.
Way before when stuff like this was sold on iTunes digitally. Not way before, but a couple years before. So I wasn't able to just go and buy the second episode. So I ended up going, I wanted to watch the rest of it. So I ended up going to Amazon and buying it on DVD so that I could watch the second part.
Wow. Wow. You couldn't rent it?
I didn't think of that. I might have been able to rent it from Netflix. I hadn't thought about that, but yeah, crazy. All right. So I have also been continuing to watch Tales of the City. That is almost finished. I finished Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Season 6. Really enjoyed that season. I'm still kind of baffled about why I waited so long to watch it. I thoroughly enjoyed it. And I failed to mention that when we were previously talking about the space stuff that we were watching around the time of Apollo 11, I watched the movie Hidden Figures. Have you seen this movie, Josh?
Oh, yeah. And I own it. I love this movie.
Wow. I think you did talk about it on the show at one point. Wow. This was such a good movie. Mm-hmm. And just the stuff that's in that, it's just still so hard for me to imagine that our society operated that way.
Right.
It's just staggering. The institutional racism that was in place in the country at the time. We're dealing with so many racism problems now, but this is a thing where, you know, it's okay to require people of color to use a different coffee pot.
Right.
It's just ridiculous.
It's mind-blowing that's where we came from and that we were still able to accomplish anything.
Right. Yeah. So, wow, what an amazing film. If you are at all interested in space stuff and you haven't watched this, you should rent it or watch it on one of the streaming services. And if you have girls, if you have daughters, I don't know how old they should be to watch this because there is some language in it, but this film is so inspiring.
Yeah. Well, and like I've got a 6-year-old and she's too young to even be interested in something like this. But I think I watched it with Eden when she was 10. She got it. I think she did appreciate it. I should watch it with her again. I think she'd really appreciate it now.
Loved this.
Yeah.
All right. That is it for me. How about you, Josh?
Actually, a fair amount of stuff and a variety of things. Finished Veronica Mars, season 4. Very happy with it. It's a different Veronica Mars season. And I talked about that a little bit before. It's edgier. It's got a lot more language. It's got more sexual content in it than previous seasons. It's got more graphic violence in it than previous seasons. And just from the way the show is structured, the one thing that's really different is previous seasons, there would be a new case that she was investigating every single episode. And that's not the case this time around. There's really just 2 things that she investigates. And one of them only occupies, I don't know, the first 2 episodes maybe. And then the rest of the season is just about the main plot line, this serial bomber in Neptune. So it was good. It was really good. I'm not going to spoil anything about the ending. I really liked it. I don't know if they're going to make more of them. I hope that they do, but they were calling it a mini series. They weren't really calling it season four. So I don't know if there's going to be more. I just hope that there will be, because it was good.
Cool.
I also said on the last episode that by the time we recorded again, I would finish Gears of War 4. Fortunately, because we took a week off last week, I wasn't a liar because I finished it last night with Joe. It was good, but not great. The story was really, they tried to make it an emotional story. They didn't really do a great job of it. It's got a lot of great Gears of War action, but it's good, but it's not great. It's not my thing. It made me happy that I didn't sink time into Gears of War 1, 2, or 3.
Oh, interesting.
And I'll probably play Gears 5 when it comes out, but only because it's on Game Pass. Like, we finished it, and I said, like, the very first thing that I said to Joe was, well, I'm glad I don't have to pay for Gears 5. So, like, it's going to be good. It's just not my thing, apparently. So that's it on the gaming side. I have not had much time for gaming lately. I did also see a movie. This one will surprise no one who listens to the show. This weekend was the opening for Hobbs and Shaw, the spinoff from the Fast and the Furious movies.
Yep.
This one just featuring Dwayne Johnson and Jason Statham. I loved it. Absolutely loved it. It is the same stupid action movie that all of the Fast and the Furious movies are. The only downside is because it's not a Fast and the Furious movie, there's not a bunch of really awesome car stuff, which I really like the car stuff in Fast and the Furious movies. It's just an action movie, but it's fun. It's really fun. I liked it a lot. So
cool. I want to see this.
Yeah, you should. It's fun. It's really fun. It's a little bit longer than it needs to be at 2 hours and 15 minutes, but it's fun. You'll like it. And then I also have new hardware. I had been asking for probably a couple of months recommendations on monitors, and I finally purchased a new computer monitor. When I saw one on Woot, it was a refurb, but it was exactly the type of thing I was looking for and definitely in the price range I was looking for. It is the HP 25X. It is a 24-inch, because Jen won't let me have a bigger monitor than that, 24-inch. It is 1080p because I don't have ridiculous GPU. So 1080p for resolution and 144 hertz with AMD FreeSync. And it's one of the few FreeSync monitors that also works with NVIDIA G-Sync in case I decide to get an NVIDIA GPU eventually. And I'm loving this monitor.
Cool.
It's really bright. The colors seem really good to me. I'm not an expert when it comes to color accuracy and stuff like that.
Right.
But I think it looks really good. The FreeSync works without issue. It even does FreeSync through the HDMI input with the Xbox One. I tested that out last night. You can do variable refresh rate with the Xbox One with this monitor. And as a refurb on Woot, I got it for $125.
That's insane.
Yes. It's super insane.
That is fantastic. Yeah. Wow. Hey, you know, in all fairness to Jen, can you remind people where your monitor is?
Yeah, my desk is in my dining room. So,
right.
Yes, she has very good reason for not allowing me to have a gigantic monitor or for having multiple monitors, but I'm still going to complain about it. So, yeah. So I love this monitor. Actually, I think just yesterday, HP announced what's essentially a new version of it, but it's in their HP Omen line, which is their specific gaming product line now. And it's the HP Omen 25X. And it's a newer version. I think it's still 24 inches. I think it's It might be 4K. It's definitely higher than 1080p. And I think it's 244 hertz or whatever. You know, it's you know, very much next level compared to what this monitor is. And it's a lot more expensive. But I bet it's probably pretty good because this monitor I'm loving, absolutely loving. So
cool.
Yeah, I would definitely recommend it. That's it. That's it for the show. It's a little bit longer. Sorry, but that's what happens when jerks like me make us miss a week. So maybe next week will be a little bit more of a normal episode. If you want to follow us on Twitter, Richard is at Richard Gunther. I'm at Josh Pollard. The website is at DigiMediaZone. Same handle for Instagram if you want to follow us over there. We're also on Facebook and all of that. All of our contact information is up at the website where the show notes are, thedigitalmediazone.com. Richard's also got another podcast that he hosts over there at the DMZ. It's called Home On. Richard, it's your smart home technology show. What's going on with Home On?
Our next episode coming out pretty soon is with Leo Dess. He's from Allegion, the company behind the lock company Schlage. You may think about this a little bit. We've talked about smart locks before, but we've never actually had a lock company on the show.
Wow.
So I'm very excited to have them on. Schlage has been around for 100 years, and we are going to talk about how they approached moving into smart home tech.
Yeah, like you have locks on your house. Like everyone who's listening to us has locks on their house. And there's probably a 50-50 chance that the lock on your house is made by Schlage. So, yeah, that's a big deal. Cool. Very cool. All right. Well, we also record the show live on normally on Tuesday nights around 8:30 p.m. Eastern. We use Mixer. You can find it right at the website. You can find it by following us on Twitter. There's video. There's audio. There's a chat room. You can participate in it fully. So just look for those tweets to know when we're going to record the next episode, because that's going to do it for episode 492. He's Richard Gunther, and I'm Josh Pollard. Thanks for listening to Entertainment 2.0. Adios.
Goodbye.